Hello and welcome to this week's Boxing News podcast, The Opening Bell. I'm Boxing News editor Tris Dixon, joined by Matt Christie. Matt, we've had a week's layoff. What's up? Where were you last week?
I was in Crete last week. This time last week, I would have been sat by the pool with a beer, quite content. Obviously missing this place a hell of a lot.
Yeah, I bet. I can see that in your eyes. Okay, obviously you come straight back into the thick of a really busy issue. We've had a lot going on. We've spoken to George Groves and Carl Froch this week ahead of their fight. I've written, very sadly, Tommy Morrison's obituary. We've got a big interview with Riddick Bowen this week. But let's get started. Let's get underway with some of the preview stuff we've got looking ahead to this weekend's fights. Lee preview, Ricky Burns world title defence against Raimundo Beltran. 12-round fight up in Scotland. Paul Wheeler, who's written the preview, and he's going to be ringside in Scotland. It's not an easy fight for Burns, is it, considering he had such a hard night last time out?
No, I think if this fight, if it had got through Jose Gonzalez without any problems at all, people may have criticised Beltran as a challenger. But as a result of the problems that he encountered, those old question marks that surrounded Ricky in the early part of his world title reigns are very much there again, and I think Beltran could give him a test.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I was ringside for Beltran's fight against Ji-Hoon Kim in Vegas earlier in this year, and it was the thrilling. The first round was an absolute thriller where they were both decked and hurt, and it was great stuff to watch. But he didn't look, with all due respect, world class on the night, even though he ended up doing enough to win. But then with Matchroom's investment in Ricky Burns, I think after the scare that Gonzalez had, they didn't want a top tier guy, and also they've said all along that they're trying to build the Burns brand in Scotland, which means racking up some defences in packing out the arenas and the venues and trying to get a substantial following for one of those big fights that does come along, so that they can fit it in a football stadium up there.
Yeah, and I think that's what they've got to do. I think the jury's still out on Burns' appeal outside of Scotland. But I think it's hard to criticise him too much, because Gonzalez was clear in through his last performance. Gonzalez was clearly a better fighter than many had anticipated. Beltran is one of those guys who's been in and around the top 10 for a while, but he's always lost when he's made that step up, hasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, Beltran, he's just, like you say, he's just one of those guys who's been in and around the scene for ages. Obviously, when you fight or when you box out of the wild card gym, you sort of seem to get in everywhere. You seem to sort of spar rounds with people, and sort of your name keeps cropping up. And that's obviously been the case with Beltran throughout his career. And it's most likely his last chance, and so he's got to take it with both hands. And I mean, something that I like about Beltran, which he's done that not many people have done, is he's come over to the UK 2 weeks in advance, and quite often people who challenge for titles come over here, almost leave it to the last minute. I don't think Kovalev was here anything like 2 weeks before the Cleverley fight. So Beltran, we know he's taking it seriously, but like I said, it is very much last chance saloon with him. With regards to the bookmakers, you can get Burns. Well, Burns is a 2-7 on favourite, which indicates exactly how much chance the bookies think Beltran has got, with him a 7-2 outsider. So got a fighting chance. And in fact, one of the most interesting things I've read this week was from Scott Cardle. I'm not sure where I saw it now, but he said he'd sparred Beltran and said he was surprised at how hard he hit. And obviously Ricky was up against it against Gonzalez last time, but one thing that you can't accuse Ricky of having is a poor chin, and so providing he can take Beltran's best shots, you've got to think he'll still be standing at the final bell.
Yeah, you'd have thought so. I mean, Burns, I think he was wobbled a few times against Gonzalez. I've seen he's been dropped a few times in his career. He's not an indestructible machine. He's not one of those George Chavallo type chins, is he? But he's certainly very, very sturdy.
Extremely fit.
Yeah, exactly. And he's going to, I think he's going to have a point to prove, because he's well aware that since he's moved onto the world stage, his most recent performance was by far and away the poorest. And, you know, you can only judge a fighter on their last fight, that old adage. And I think that he'll be looking to make a statement and, you know, head on the block. I'd pick him to win fairly convincingly over 12.
Yeah, I think you're right. There comes a point, I mean, just looking at Ricky Burns down the line from here, there comes a point where a 30-year-old lightweight stops improving.
Yeah.
And so it'll be interesting to see exactly what Ricky's movements are over the next sort of 12 months, really,
yeah.
As they look for that big fight that could take place in a stadium up in Scotland.
Yeah, I do. But this fight as well, I think, is... It's a good measuring stick for Ricky, isn't it? I mean, if he struggles or whatever, if he loses, then you know we can say he found his level. But if he looks sensational, if he manages to stop Beltran, or he really looks the business over the full 12, then you know that drum will start beating again for the bigger fights.
Yeah, good stuff. Also in action this weekend, stateside, one of your favourites, heavyweight clash. You do love your sort of. Tempted to say mediocre, but mediocre heavyweight clashes, don't you? There's something about it.
Yeah.
And we've got Chris Areola against Seth Mitchell, and it's an interesting fight, isn't it?
It is really interesting. It's a typical heavyweight crossroads fight. Areola, his record would suggest that he's on the slide. Mitchell, even though he got revenge against Jonathan Banks, he didn't look overly impressive in doing so. You might say this was a pick 'em fight. You've got to favour, for me anyway. I'd favour Areola in this one.
I think just because
Mitchell looks so delicate, even in the rematch when Banks attacked. I think Areola is a better boxer than Jonathan Banks. I think he's a better boxer than people give him credit for. And if Areola is relatively fit, or as fit as he can be. I think he'll catch up with Seth Mitchell at some point.
I remember I was at Seth Mitchell's fight with Timur Abragimov, went on the Amir Khan Lamont Peterson undercard in Washington a couple of years ago, and when Mitchell wiped out Abragimov, you know, someone who I thought was tough and durable and sturdy and all the rest of it, I thought Mitchell had been a hype job to that point, and then in my eyes he sort of became a bit of a hype job to me, because I thought it was an outstanding result. Definitely hasn't gone on to back up those thoughts. Obviously, he got wobbled by Chaz Witherspoon, and then had two very patchy fights with Banks, one that he lost badly, and the one that he somehow won. I've got no idea what happened in that second fight. I'm not sure anyone does. Mm. But with regards to the Areola fight, I mean, the key is, as it generally has been, 9 times out of 10 in Areola's career, I think if he shows up in shape, I think he's got a very good chance of winning.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, there was a lot of hype about Areola when he was on the way up, and you know, he did for a while. He lost weight. He looked like he was motivated. I think you know, Mitchell's got a decent punch, but I think Areola's durability can probably match that. I would not convince that we can say the same vice versa.
What I will say, in the magazine, Danny Flexen has done the preview, and he's done a great job with the preview. He's spoken to both fighters, but also there's some really good, interesting insight from Bryant Jennings on the fight, who Danny spoke to for an expert view. And Bryant Jennings, who's clearly studied his domestic rivals very closely, has some very, very interesting opinions about the fight. So take a look at that if you can. Elsewhere in the magazine this week, Matt, there's been some very sad news, isn't there, with the passing of Tommy Morrison, which, well, we called it there, the hero who starred in a tragedy. I mean, he was obviously in Rocky V, diagnosed with HIV, former WBO heavyweight champion, fought Lennox Lewis, fought Carl Williams, fought George Foreman, fought Ray Mercer. Tommy was a poster boy in 1990s boxing, really, wasn't he?
He was. I remember when he came on the scene, and it was shortly after Riddick Bowe, Ray Mercer, and Lennox Lewis had all won their Olympic medals, and there was also Bruce Seldon in that pack as well, another top prospect. But there was something about Morrison that looked to be, you know, quite special, and a very charismatic guy, left hook from hell, and an exciting fighter from, you know, from when he came onto the scene until he left it when Lennox Lewis beat him, and then obviously there was the HIV diagnosis and what have you. I mean, but I just looked at, you know, Tommy Morrison from afar. I thoroughly enjoyed watching his fights. But you spent some time with Tommy Morrison. It was quite a revealing time as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, I went. In fact, we got a picture in the magazine that I took.
I thought that was Getty.
No, yeah, Getty Images, the top agency, yeah. No, I mean, you can't put a price on this kind of photography. But no, on a more serious note, yeah, I spent time with Tommy. I remember it very, very vividly, actually, the meeting in 2004. But just for a bit of context, I mean, he and I stayed in touch over the subsequent years, on and off, and we bumped into each other once in a while in New York, once at the Hall of Fame and at different fights and here, there and everywhere. And we always sort of take time out to see how the other was doing. And we generally got on quite well. I met Tommy in 2004 in Sparta in Tennessee. I travelled overnight. I went to the Chris Bird-Andrew Gallotta fight that was on the same bill as John Ruiz against Fraser Quendo, which was a terrible fight. Yeah, Bird Gallotta was actually a good fight. Also on that bill, just if my memory serves me, was Wayne Braithwaite and Ricardo Maiorga. Some good fights on there, but anyway, homeless in New York that night, got the bus out to Tulsa the next day. I think that it was a day or so long, and met Tommy in Tulsa, who picked me up from the bus station, went in his station wagon to a cafe and had some chicken wings, and we talked. Happy to talk about all of his career, all of his fights and everything, but of the, I don't know, maybe 3, 4, 5 hours we spent together, I can't recall exactly how long, but it was a long time. He spent a lot of the time telling me that this HIV diagnosis was incorrect, that he was HIV free, that it was a false test, there were conspiracy theories, it was this and it was that. And, you know, he didn't convince me in the least. I felt for him. I wanted him to be correct. People still say, I think, you know, his wife at the time of his death thought he was correct and that he didn't have it. But the downward slide of Tommy Morrison, the downward trajectory, you can see the picture of him here in 2004. You can see the picture of him in 2011 when he was arrested somewhere else in the Midwest, and we saw some pictures that weren't very nice more recently when Tommy looked frankly terrible. And you know, it's just heartbreaking to think you couldn't think of it you know, someone sort of more fresh faced with more golden boy style looks and all the rest of it to go downhill and so dramatically. You couldn't have picked like a lineup of people who was sort of, you know, almost like the best looking fighter or whatever. You couldn't have picked someone to have a more alarming change of face, physique and everything else, could you?
No, it is shocking. And I remember when that picture you're just referring to, which is like his mugshot from a couple of years ago. I remember when we first saw that in the Boxing News office. And that was quite upsetting seeing it, because the change is alarming. And I think I was saying something yesterday, I know we all age and generally, you know, for and apart from the very, very lucky amongst us, we tend to start to look a little bit older as we get older. But Morrison looks like he's aged about 50 years here. But it's almost like it's the curse of the rich, the famous and the beautiful, isn't it? I mean, they kind of... Morrison obviously had illnesses, he had issues, there were things going on in the background. But his appearance as well, I think this last time when he was in the ring and it looked like he'd had some kind of... pec implants and that sort of thing. His whole body was misshapen. He was just clinging on to the past so desperately. And obviously, you know, you do that, you're playing a dangerous game.
We've put a couple of stories that I did with Tommy up on the website. Obviously, the full obituaries in the magazine and the app this week, which I'd ask you guys to take a look at, because, you know, I knew the guy fairly well, I think, as well as almost most any boxing writer got to know him over the years. And online we've put the interview from 2004 when I met him in Sparta, and another long one that I did over the phone with him in 2009 before we sort of were going to have a mixed martial arts fight in I think it was Wyoming, and he had that fight. You can see it on YouTube. In terms of Tommy the fighter, though, I mean, let's try and pick things up a little bit in terms of not being all doom and gloom. I mean, he, like your idol, Burt Cooper, was involved in many, many, many fun fights, wasn't he? I mean, Tommy Morrison against Carl Williams, Tommy Morrison against Joe Hip. I mean, these were staples of 1990s boxing heavyweights.
Yeah, I think one of my favourites was when he was towards the end of his top flight career, and that was against Razor Ruddock. And that fight was just Tommy Morrison all over. You know
how Ruddock got up from that left hook, and it was just staggering, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but you know, Morrison, he was susceptible to a punch, but he could land a better one. And I think people don't give him enough credit. I know the fight wasn't a fantastic spectacle, but I don't think people give him enough credit for outscoring George Foreman more clearly than any other fighter managed during George Foreman's illustrious comeback.
I think also something about Tommy Morrison. I think Jerry Cooney might have suffered from it as well. I think that where it might be to do with their colour, and that they've got a lot going for them outside of the ring, in that they're marketable, TV friendly, you know, TV guys who've been on the TV and in films and what have you. I think people think that they get to where they are just because of their looks. But Tommy could fight, couldn't he? He was in great fights, and unfortunately for him, one of people's best memories of him in the ring was against Ray Mercer.
Yeah, well, it was unforgettable, wasn't it, that fight? Well, the conclusion particularly, but for the wrong reasons from Tommy's point of view. It was a horrific finish. And let's face it, all credit to Morrison for coming back from a knockout like that, because those are the kind of career finishing kind of knockouts that he suffered there. If anybody hasn't seen it, it's still shocking to this day. I mean, Morrison's head is almost like a lottery ball bouncing around under the weight of Ray Mercer's fists, and it's horrendous. And he came back and he won the WBO title after that, and he was a mainstay in the heavyweight, in the upper echelons of the heavyweights for those early 90s.
How will you remember Tommy?
I'll just remember him as a thrilling fighter who gave his all, a lot of courage. I think he probably achieved as much as he was going to in that era. It's difficult to also forget the horrendous demise, though, in all honesty.
It is, isn't it? I mean, especially when it's kind of, you know, very different, but the same but different, I suppose. When you look at Evander Holyfield's career, you remember the glory days, but the end was so drawn out, has been so drawn out, that you can't help but let that cloud your opinion somewhat. And I think Tommy's obviously was a very different demise to Holyfield's, but you know, in terms of Holyfield just losing to lesser fighters and so forth, Tommy's was obviously a very, very health-based demise. It's just beyond sad, isn't it? And some of the quotes we've got in the obituary, and with hindsight, I mean, Tommy, you know, the feature that I did in 2004, the headline on the front page of Boxing News then was "I'm Still Standing."
Yeah,
I mean, it's all dreadfully sad, I'm afraid.
William Hill, sponsors of the Opening Bell podcast. Bet £25 and get a £25 bet free. Bet now with williamhill.com.
Just on a more cheery note, we mentioned a couple of weeks ago that you've been to see Reddick Bowen, and very pleased that with the help of Andrew Gray from boxingportraits.com, who's provided us a couple of cracking images of Reddick Bowen, you've managed to bring your meeting with Reddick Bowen to life. You've now met the full set of Bo, Holyfield, Tyson and Lennox Lewis. What stands out as your most fond memory out of meeting the four of those?
I think Evander Holyfield probably, just because I had a lot more time with him. I felt like I got to know him a bit better, but the warmest of those characters, I would say, was possibly Riddick. I maybe wasn't expecting that. The meeting, as you'll read, from my point of view, didn't get off to a flyer. I didn't quite know what to make of him to start off with.
And vice versa.
But yeah, no, it was to meet those guys. I mean, to say that I've met those guys is incredible for me, a lifelong boxing fan, and I'm very humbled to have done so and to be able to say that. But yeah, Bo for me. That night when he beat Evander Holyfield in 91, was it 92? That's as good as any heavyweight performance. I think he'd fare well. Not saying he'd beat every heavyweight in history, but he'd fare well against every heavyweight history on that night.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting stuff. We've got in our social media pages, we've put the idea of matching Riddick Bowe and Lennox Lewis together, and we've let readers have their say on that. There's some interesting stuff there. And I mean, the magazine, quite frankly, is packed. There's a great feature that Danny Flexen's done with Kareem Mayfield, who's the latest big signing for Top Rank. Some really interesting stuff. There's obviously Pete Muscardi on the return of the little African star, Joy, who's returned to form after losing to Hecky Butler. How to live like a fighter and be inactive. Loads of interesting stuff in there. And one thing that really caught my eye, actually, was Paul Wheeler, who's been in touch with Sergey Kovalev. Doesn't have many nice things to say about Nathan Cleverley, does he?
No, and you don't always see that, do you, in boxing? I don't know if it was a kind of a language thing or whatever, but I don't think it was. I think he really did have absolutely nothing complimentary to say about Nathan Cleverley whatsoever. I mean, even when a fighter goes in there and walks through somebody in one round, they come out, and even if it's just lip service, they're quite pleasant about the guy they've just knocked out. But no, there's none of that there. It's quite shocking, really.
It's somewhat ironic, isn't it? Kovalev mashed Cleverley and isn't complimentary. Kiko Martinez was mashed by Carl Frampton, and he's not complimentary either. I mean, Martinez here saying, "I'll retire Carl Frampton" in our news section, a piece by Ben Jacobs. I mean, it's one thing if you've done a job on someone like Kovalev did. It's another thing if you've been flattened in the manner that Kiko Martinez was. I mean, what basis do you think Martinez has got to be saying that to Frampton? Just to entice him to a fight overseas?
Perhaps to entice him. I mean, it'd be probably be a one of his biggest earners, wouldn't it, if he could get a defence against Frampton. I don't know. I mean, you can make an argument that for the first seven or eight rounds of that fight, Kiko was well in that fight. But no, I mean, the comments, "I'll retire Carl Frampton," are outlandish, aren't they, to say the least?
Yeah, they are. But talking of outlandish, though, and again, switching to a slightly more positive tack, this time next week, I won't be here. I should, in theory, be in Las Vegas, where I'll be spending the week bringing plenty of updates and insight to the website and to our new app on the Mayweather-Alvarez fight week. We'll be doing that from Monday when I land all the way through to Sunday after the fight. Really looking forward to the fight, to the bill. I've just finished doing my Mayweather-Alvarez preview. One thing that is for sure is, as much as I'm looking forward to the main event, I'm not exactly dreading the undercard, where Lucas Matisse is going to be fighting Danny Garcia, and it's got to be the most hotly anticipated undercard match I can remember.
Yeah, I mean, that full credit to Golden Boy for putting that together. It is a mouth-watering contest, that one. I mean, obviously, all eyes will be on the main event because it's the premier fighter in boxing and a potential heir to that throne. But if you're going to throw two fighters together and want to guarantee entertainment, then you couldn't look much further than this pair, could you?
Danny Garcia, I mean, he's one of those guys perennially underrated. He's the underdog again so far, according to the bookies. 9-4 underdog. Lucas Matisse, 4-9 on favourite. Draw at 28-1. I think you'd be a brave man to go for a draw on that one.
Yeah, I mean, nothing obviously surprises us anymore, but that would be a shock if that went the full 12.
Would you be surprised if this was a light welterweight Hagler-Hearns?
No.
It could be. No, people could be excited. That's what people want, isn't it?
It could well be, yeah. And you mentioned Danny Garcia kind of being written off of that. I think with the exception of the Eric Morales rematch, I think of his recent bouts, he's probably gone into every one of them as an underdog. I think he can win this fight. I'm not saying I'd put a great deal of money on it, but it wouldn't surprise me if Garcia came out of this one standing.
Interesting. Very. I mean, it's beyond interesting. I mean, it should be a blooming, really exciting fight. I mean, I'm not anticipating Ishe Smith, Carlos Molina to be a slugfest.
No.
I think that could be one of the worst contests of the year, with all due respect to both fighters, who I rate them both highly.
Yeah.
But I think they've got styles that will really cancel each other out. But I am really, really intrigued to see Ashley Theophane against Pablo Cesar Cano, which I think is just, you know, when you take the American version of Theophane and put him in the mix with someone like Cano, it's different to putting the English version of Theophane in there. So I think he's got an outside shot. I don't think he's going to be the favourite in that fight, but he's got an outside shot to do it. And I'm looking forward to seeing him there. I mean, it's always nice. I always find it nice when an English name, a British name, gets to fight on these big bills. And unfortunately, Anthony Ogogo had to pull out with an injury. But Ashley will be there repping the UK.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a really good test for him. It's a good test for his opponent. And you know, Kano, as you say, will start as favourite. But I really think Theophane's got a really good chance, and it's good to see a British fighter, as you say, over there, but also in a fight of this magnitude often, unless they're kind of plunged into a world title fight, they tend to be like in six rounders and what have you, or eight rounders lower down the card. This is a really, really good opportunity for Ashley Theophane. And for anybody that hasn't seen it on the website, he has sent us about months worth of his diaries from predominantly from the Floyd Mayweather gym in Las Vegas, where he's training with the likes of Mayweather and Ishae Smith, who you mentioned before. And it's a brilliant insight. And also, it should be mentioned that you know, that these diaries come in and they take very little, you know, very little subbing or anything like that. Ashley Theophane is he's quite a good writer as well as quite a good boxer.
Yeah, he's a clever chap, Ashley. Not sure. I haven't written the preview for the undercard yet, so I'm not quite sure which way I'll go on that one yet. Put some more thought up against it. But yeah, I mean, I'm very much looking forward to Las Vegas. Hopefully, we'll be able to do the podcast over the phone. If not, it'll be you and Danny next week.
Yeah.
But I am looking forward to getting out there. I think it will be a terrific fight week. And normally, when I'm over there, I have a lot of meetings, different things to do with regards to the magazine, and not a great deal with regards to interviews and the like, although last time was different when I managed to get out to 50 Cent's gym and sort of got Chad Dawson, Pascal Gambo and several others. But this time I'm going almost to just watch the fight, and it's very different when you go over and you live the fight and everything you do is geared around that fight. I mean, it's definitely the high point of the job, without a shadow of a doubt.
Will you still feel the same amount of excitement for this trip to Vegas as you did for, say, I don't know, one of your first couple of trips out there?
No. I mean, the excitement of going to Vegas is different now. I think it repulses me and amazes me in equal measures now. The novelty's worn off, but the amazement hasn't.
Yeah.
And I mean, the thing is as well, I mean, ultimately, obviously, you're going for the fights, and it's nice to see some of the guys in America that I know, like Steve Farhood, Dan Raphael, different people like that who I don't get to see every day. It's nice to do that. It's a very privileged position to be able to get out there and see the fights. But that's the time. That's when everything kicks in. You know, when you get to the show and you fight, you take your seat, and then, you know, you're only hours away from the fight happening, and then when the fights start happening, the big fights come out and the hair stand up on the back of your neck still. I mean, I can't imagine that ever going. I mean, maybe it will, but I can't imagine that ever leaving you, certainly for big fights like this. And fights like Garcia, Matisse. I mean, if that doesn't get the hair on the back of my neck standing up, then I won't come into work. I won't come back. I'm sure I'll probably be on my feet when the fighters start to walk down. And, you know, just trying to shake my legs out to get the goosebumps out. So yeah, very much looking forward to that. In closing, I did want to say, I have been really pleased with the reaction to the feature I wrote on depression last week. It is a subject that does mean a lot to me, and it means a lot to many fighters, many that I've spoken to, and I'm sure there are many, many, many more that I haven't spoken to, but would like to. Hopefully, the feature on depression was just the start of something that I would like to take forwards. In one way, shape or form. I'd like to work with promoters, I'd like to work with TV networks, I'd like to work with governing bodies, and I'd like to work with the Board of Control. The Board of Control have volunteered any help that I would like, and I'm meeting with with WBC execs in Vegas next week. So watch this space, because it is a subject that I think is incredibly serious, incredibly prevalent in boxing, and something I very much hope myself and Boxing News will have a substantial hand in helping moving forwards. And on that note, we shall say goodbye, Matt.
Goodbye, Tris.
And
enjoy Vegas.
Thank you very much. Yeah, hopefully we'll be on the phone next week, and if not, then I'll leave it to you and Danny, and then we'll do a Vegas recap the following week.
Okay, cool.
All right. Okay, glad you enjoyed Crete, and I'm also glad that you took a hat this time and didn't get your head burned. Okay, thanks for listening, guys.